Well, I hope to put into some kind of context some of the theological language that we were singing and that we were sharing. Sometimes Unitarian Universalists get criticized for not speaking religiously enough, and sometimes we're criticized for speaking too religiously, and sometimes we are criticized for not stopping speaking. All of these are good and valid criticisms of almost everybody on the planet. It struck me as we were singing about our lovely God that there were probably people in the room saying, "What lovely, what God, why are we singing this?" And if we substituted the word life for the word God, nobody would have any problem with it. The second song, hymn, instead of saying life, said source of peace. I think that probably works also. We have many vocabularies for trying to stammer our sense of connection to the source of life and to the wonder of life and to the mystery of life. Not simply one language, not simply one system of myths, lies that reveal a greater truth, but many ways. And as Unitarian Universalists, we accept that we are on a journey searching the scriptures of humanity, the traditions and the ways of humanity, not accepting or rejecting only the surface level. How many here believe in the biblical story, in the beginning was the light? Okay, how many of you believe in the physicist story, in the beginning was the light? The Big Bang. Great example. We call it the Big Bang. Why wasn't it a Big Bang? Nobody was there to hear it, number one. Number two is, what was the medium conducting the sound, even had there been somebody a million miles away listening for the sound of the Big Bang? Your scream is not heard in the vacuum of space. But we all believe in the Big Bang on the surface, reject the biblical story on the surface, and I'm not telling you to accept the Bible. I am telling you that we have double standards when it comes to a scientific vocabulary and to a spiritual vocabulary. And I think that that's as closed and narrow and prejudiced as many of the philosophies and religions that Unitarian Universalists often criticize. We are, since that big silent bang, whoa, Zen, since that big silent bang, there were motes and there was creation and there was light expanding and defining by its expansion the universe itself. We're journeying on that same trip that started back then when time began. We are wandering through space in the words of Bertolt Brecht in the great Kurt Weill song. We are lost in the stars. Somewhere out in the stars, little stars, big stars, blowing all around, lost out there in the stars. And as we wander, we look for light, we cast a light, we create lights, we look for enlightenment, and we, as Unitarian Universalists, are wanderers who understand, at least at some level, that we are on a journey. We haven't said, I found it, this is it, let's stop thinking, let's stop exploring, let's stop discussing and arguing and worrying over the details and the metaphors. They're important. They engage our intelligence. They engage our reason. They engage our passion, so that we can do something with all of those things. We are wanderers. We're wandering today. We're not at our normal place. We are wandering Unitarian Universalists, and I believe that's good in almost every sense. Because all of you here today chose to be here. There are very few Unitarian Universalists who come out of a sense of guilt, who show up because, you know, my parents were Unitarian Universalists and their parents were Unitarian Universalists and I don't want to break the string. I find this very seldom a motive in UU attendance. There are very few people who show up in order to get a religious dispensation. You are forgiven, my son. We don't give dispensations, we give obligations. You don't get the, okay, it doesn't matter out there, as long as you're feeling good today, that's cool. That's not why we're here. We're here to get the energy to go and engage the world, the spiritual energy, the boost that when the sun is not shining, we know the sun is shining. We can't see it. When we can't see the stars during the daytime, it doesn't mean they're not there. It means that they are drowned out by the light. When we are sore, afraid, and tired, and depressed, we come together to give each other comfort and energy. Not answers. That's not our job. But energy and acceptance and, yes, some guidance. But we are wanderers. We're wanderers through all kinds of traditions. My old friend, the Reverend Emily Champagne, said that the title of her sermon was, "We borrow from the Buddhists, why not the Baptists?" And the answer to that is, it's easier to be a spectator at something that is foreign to you than to deal with however you were traumatized as a child. So that from whatever tradition you may have come, you probably cut another tradition more slack. I know that when I was at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, I was in many doctoral classes with some really brilliant Catholics and one woman who's become a leading Catholic theologian. No one was harder on Catholic tradition than the Catholics. No one was more understanding of Catholic tradition than the Lutherans. Okay, these were not the Lutherans that may have been in the pulpits where you were growing up in Missouri or Wisconsin, but at the doctoral level, these... I'm sorry, that was wrong synods. That is Lutheran. Yeah, Lutheran. That is Lutheran. At the academic levels, there was tremendous understanding and acceptance of the multiplicity of ways that we try to stammer our sense of connection as we wander. One of the great freedoms of Unitarian Universalism is that we are free to move about, to pick our own ways, to evaluate them and reevaluate them, to change. Now, one of the little intentional games that I played with you, and I'm now confessing to being manipulative by not manipulating, was when Marlies asked, how shall we set up the chairs? I said, don't. Let people set up the chairs. We've moved our location. Let's see what makes sense to people who are given freedom and given choice. Obviously, this side of the room likes each other very much because they gave each other no room whatsoever. If we continue to meet here, we'll save a great deal of heating in the winter. There were the banners and our sacramental pieces, the flame, the book, the flowers, and the bell. And here, is where the traditional preacher stands. I get the message, okay? So, set up orienting towards something that made sense to you. And the choir oriented as it was, and we've now made adjustments. Well, that's our job. Our job is not to assume that our lives, like pews, are nailed down and the seat that we have chosen is the seat that we always have to stay in. One of the things that makes it easy for me on some Sunday mornings, on most Sunday mornings at the church, is that we're creatures of habit. I know where you sit. So it also means I know when you're not there, Sam. But Sam at least has picked an analogous spot to where he would sit were he there on a more regular basis. So he's made it easy again. Close to the door for some reason. I don't know. Go now. We're people who are comforted by our rituals. Without getting technical, everybody has some level, it's not a yes or a no, but some level of obsessive compulsiveness. We want to read papers in certain orders. We want to sit in certain places, mark out a certain territory, have a sense that there is a room somewhere for us. There is a place for us. There's a place where we can feel comfortable. One of the reasons for ritual is not magic, but it is a way of ordering the world that seems to be so chaotic and so tumultuous with so much change and so much anxiety. We walk into an experience, whatever our religion, whether it's a Friday afternoon for a Muslim or Friday evening for the Jewish population or a Sunday or a Saturday for witnesses or Adventists. Whenever it is, we look for some kind of order. That's why we have orders of service. And if we changed it every week, it would be like changing locations every week. People would start to go, I don't know, there's something that just isn't working here for me. I had a friend, very, very dear friend, my best friend actually at the Graduate Theological Union, was studying to be a Catholic priest. He was a Franciscan, and I was there at his elevation to the diaconate. And I was there at his first communion when he did communion as a priest. And he went into this little Hispanic church with lots of statues, painted statues, kind of Indian Rococo statues, and being an intellectual, later a PhD in marine biology, he was a Chardinian, he said, these have got to go. So he took all the statues out of the sanctuary. The people came up to him and said, Father, you moron, these are my statues. I grew up with them. Who are you to come and throw them out? Well, but they're primitive and they're this and they're that. And the people said, but they're ours. This is what I had as a child. This is given. These are friends. This is. I don't confuse. It's not idolatrous. I don't confuse it with the essence of divinity. But would you go into somebody's home and repaint the walls and rearrange the furniture without permission? I don't think so. So the statues the next week were back in. And then a miracle happened. The statues marched out 1 inch. A week. Now, nobody ever owned who did it, but those statues marched out very, very slowly, seemingly imperceptibly, they weren't all gone. He was gone before all of them were gone, but about four of them had permanently exited the sanctuary. There are some kinds of changes that we need for our own comfort to be gradual. There are some kinds of changes that we can, in an epiphany, say, you know, that's not important. Just because I sat in that seat, just because I was in that job, just because I belong to this organization, just because I have always, this is not partisan, voted a certain way means that I have to do that without examining it. This season of the days of awe are a time for people to turn inside and examine their lives. And examine our habits. And we all have habits, many of them good, some of them not good. And examine our assumptions, many of them good, many of them not good. But what makes them not good is that they are assumptions. That's the nature of things that aren't examined. I submit to you that if nothing else, you will think of the Big Bang differently after today than you did before. That examining even fundamental assumptions about our universe, as well as ourselves, is an important part of what it is to be a responsible human being of whatever our religious, political, or philosophical position is. That's where wisdom begins. It begins with ownership, and ownership is not by inheritance. Ownership is by examination. It is, as I indicated last week, by wrestling with the great issues of our lives. All the seats were over there. We could have had complete chaos, but I trusted that we wouldn't. Most of our lives are involved in a tension between order, which is how we've done things before, only more so often, and the tendency that we have to let's solidify what we have, and chaos. What we have could be better. Maybe we need to shatter it in order to change it. Maybe we need to push it in order to change it. But human beings in our lives, in our churches, in our jobs, in society, are involved with two impulses: to create order where there is chaos, and to create chaos where there is too much order. We see those forces going on most easily in politics. It seems very clear to me, and again, this isn't partisan, that there is a kind of fear of chaos that leads to order. And to give it a little Marxist twist, every kind of movement has, I can make it safer than Marx, a Newtonian twist, has an equal and opposite reaction to it. That as society moves towards order, somebody in Eugene, Oregon says, that seems like a really bad idea. And when more than five people get together in Eugene, Oregon to foment a little bit of chaos, there are at least five people getting together someplace else to create a little bit of order. And it's important that not one side ever wins. This is not an issue to be solved. It is a tension, like the tension amongst the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary, to accept and to jump in on the side of that part that is losing. Because it is the tension that creates the balance. If order can't win, something there is that does not love a wall. If there is too much order, we will rebel. If there is too much chaos, we will try to create the order, or we will flee the situation. Those are the truths of history, of government, and of human beings in our individual lives. As Unitarian Universalists, we accept a life without final answers. We accept a life and a religion that is a process of examining, of testing, of making something our own. If I came before you with answers, I would be gone faster than my priest friend was. Because one, I would be lying because I don't have those answers. I would be faking it, which God knows enough clergy do enough faking, including me. But I would be faking it to an unacceptable extent. And someone's going to ask me what I'm faking. I don't know. I'm faking modesty, okay? Believe me, I'll use it again, Dick. Thank you. Write it down. Just the way I shamelessly stole the Picasso line from somebody else's yesterday. We are all free agents to some extent with our own lights. You know, that big silent bang let go the spark of light moving on to the edge of the universe. And that light is all within us. We all have a little bit of that original creation shining while we live in our eyes and in our hearts and in our lives. Apart and alone, we do cast a light, and we are important. But sometimes this light is hard to see. It's hard to see in ourselves, and it's hard to see in others in all the brightness. When we come together voluntarily with our own individual lights, we add the lights together. It's a free choice for us. No one says, here it is, and this is how you must go. But when for moments we find each other and we walk together with our lights and our values and our passions working together, shining together, illuminating together, we cast a light that makes a difference in the world. And our lives and our being here together and our choosing to be here together and to share our lives and our lights is a religious act. A profoundly affirmative, religious affirmation of the life that is, of the life that we share, and of the hope that we know exists with each other, even when we can't see it. That is real, that is empirical, that is important, and we celebrate being together.